Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts.
It's K-Man time with the weather update, and it's really time to produce a good lap time on the track right now, because you take your eyes away from the timing screen for a couple of seconds, guaranteed that it will have changed in this phase of the session, because again, another improvement, this time for Nicolas Lapierre with a 331.519 to go second fastest and to within a quarter of a second of Brendan Hartley's time. So it's a hybrid car fastest from a non-hybrid second quickest and the Alpine. The Glickenhaus also a non-hybrid hypercar third fastest, with Frank Meyer still at the wheel of that. And Mike Conway, though now back in the pits, still only 66 thousandths of a second away from that Glickenhaus time. So four of the five hypercars locking out those top four positions of this opening test session of the day, with then the best of the LMP2s having just gone quicker again. Paul de Resta doing a 333.038 to put that car nearly 0.4 of a second clear of everybody else in LMP2. But there is speed to be gained out on the track at the moment. Plenty of rubber being laid down in the opening 2.5 hours of this morning's session. Still just under 90 minutes of it to go. And this is what we've been waiting for. And of course, lots of pace to look forward to later on today, with no rain expected. The heat set to build through the course of the 5-hour session that we've got to look forward to after lunch as well. So we're certainly not done yet in terms of very good times.
Just looking at that PDR, Paul de Resta time in United Autosport, that car had done a 333.3. Paul, as you mentioned, just done a 333.0. And then he's backed that up with a 333.6 on the very next time around, whilst we were updating the weather. So that car and that driver combination, Paul Truswell, looking at consistent lap times there, as well as being the fastest in class. That's pretty impressive this early on, but kind of what we expect from United Autosport and from Paul de Resta, to be fair.
Yes, and well backed up as well. Alex Lynn and Wayne Boyd, the other two drivers. Wayne Boyd, nominally a silver, but certainly a very quick driver indeed. So not running in the Pro-Am class, running in the full P2 class. I mean, it's what we hate to say it, but United Autosports does run a very good ship indeed. And they know what they're doing. They had the experience now at Le Mans, so that they've got that experience as well. And it's going to be have to be a very good performance indeed from anyone to beat United. And as you say, John, Le Mans is all about not just doing a single fast lap, but being able to string together 8 or 9 fast laps, not get hampered by traffic, not to lose your rhythm when you do get hampered by traffic, but just to be able to get back into the groove, shrug your shoulders, because there's going to be traffic around. 62 cars around Le Mans is not the busiest circuit compared to some of the places the WEC visits, but nevertheless, you will find yourself having to slow down at certain points. And in fact, everybody's going to have to slow down now, because as you say, John, red flag has been displayed again.
Yellow went out originally at Marshall's Post 9.
And which is the first chicane.
Yeah, Dunlop chicane. And
the first chicane on the Mulsanne.
My apologies. Now a red flag there. Is that someone who's just run long? We'll find out in a moment. One thing I didn't mention in the Cayman Islands weather update there was the track temperature starting to climb, Johnny. Nearly 36 Celsius now. That's up a good 10 degrees from when we started, and it will continue to climb. But obviously, this is a public road for most of the year, at least some of the track is. Becomes slightly less, it seems, every year. There's still talk about the Lintuato Nadier, the Mulsanne Strait, being bypassed as a road, as well as the run down from Arnage, Indianapolis to Arnage has been in part nowadays. But that,
I've been talking about that for years.
Yes, they have, haven't they? They have, Paul. I remember that a good 10 years ago, I would think. But that some of those areas, JP, that are full-time racetrack, have got quite dark tarmac. That's going to heat up very, very quickly indeed.
Yes. Yeah, a fair bit of resurfacing has been done for the last few years. So, yes, it's always something that drivers pay close attention to if they get a chance to do a track walk. I mean, it's tricky when the Lindwaden at the air is such a busy road in the days leading up to test day. But there'll be areas of the racetrack that could have been walked. And then, yes, you work out which areas are going to get hotter before others and to therefore offer a little bit more grip. But, I mean, that's the nature of such a long track of different ages of asphalt, and you always need to be aware of where the grip may be, particularly if you're having to deal with some traffic and be offline. You know, if I end up over this side of the circuit, which isn't the racing line, how am I going to fare in terms of marbles, in terms of dust, in terms of overall grip, and all of these things for those that haven't raced here before, or maybe it's been a good few years since they were last here and therefore are treated by the officials as rookies, that extra bit of research could pay dividends leading into the all-important sessions. I'm looking with interest under this red flag at the Paul de Resta time, the 333.038 that he set in car 23 just a moment or two ago, and then backed it up with a time very close to that. The best time for the 22 car in last year's race, they went on to win it, of course, win LMP2 as a class. Phil Hansen, Philippe Albuquerque and Paul de Resta. Best lap time in the race was done on lap 3 for that car, 329.7. It's really not a great deal of difference between the two. What are you talking, 4 seconds? And this is in a slowed down, in inverted commas, LMP2 car, and we're only in test format at this stage. So this is what the race organisers, the officials, are having to try and juggle, is the pace of a new hypercar versus a compromised LMP2 machine, and I expected slightly larger margin than that year on year. But they have said that they're not going to slow down the LMP2s again, because they've already slapped some weight on it, they've already taken some power off those cars, and if adjustment is going to happen, it won't happen this year for hypercar, but moving forward they'll maybe look to make the top class a little quicker in future seasons. But it's just an interesting comparison there, Paul.
Yeah, I think the other thing which the ACO may be tempted to do, and they can do this without affecting the specification of the LMP2 car itself, but is to reduce the refueling rate so that when it comes into the pits, which the P2 car has to do more often anyway, it will just have to spend longer in the pits being refueled. And that will just ensure that the gap that they want to establish between, almost said P1, between hypercar and P2 is maintained, because you know, you don't want to do anything really more to slow down the P2 cars, because otherwise you're taking away the appeal of the car and all that kind of thing. But by just leaving it in the pits for an extra 5 or 10 seconds on each stop, then you will have the same effect at the end of a 24 or even a 6-hour race.
I like that. I think it's a very elegant way of changing the balance of performance. We've seen it in other series before. It means
it's been done in IMSA.
Yeah, exactly. And it means you don't have to change the dynamic capabilities of the car and throw a whole load. I always think putting weight on something is inelegant and a bit rock apey, to be honest. And it's never. And I feel this, if I'm honest, I feel the safety implications on adding weight to a car. I know everybody designs cars to run under the minimum weight and ballasts them up anyway so they can put the weight where they want it. But even so, when you're talking about 100 kilos, as we are with some of these cars this weekend, over the weights that they were they were homologated for. Surely there has to be a safety implication on that, because you haven't designed all of the components to take that additional weight. And I think refueling times is a really clever way of doing something where you have absolute control over how long that car is stationary. But what it still allows, Paul, is I don't agree with, particularly at this level of racing, I don't agree with mandatory pit stop times, because I think that takes away some of the strategy. But if you control the fuel fill time, then if you short fill a car, you still get the benefit of short filling a car. If you've got a driver who saves fuel, therefore you have to put fewer litres in at the end, then you still get the benefit of that, even if you are controlling fuel flow rate, which you don't get, of course, with mandatory pit times. I like it. I'm with you on this. We're agreeing far too much, Mr. Truswell.
That's twice in the space of a week.
I know, that's unheard of, Paul. Yeah, I think it works well, and I think that, you know, it's a challenge always, but I think it's an option that should, and I'm sure will actually be employed by the SEO going forward.
On the other hand, whilst I've just set one side of the argument, I now put the case for the other side of the argument.
Fine.
Why does there need to be a gap between P2 and hypercar? Mm. They're solving different problems from different angles. Again, those with long memories go back into the class structure at Le Mans over the years. We used to have an IMSA class at Le Mans. There was no case of balancing the IMSA class with the GTP class, because that wasn't the point. The point was that the Le Mans wanted to have the best in the world at their 24-hour race, and so they just created a class for IMSA cars. And in exactly the same way, we've got a perfectly good class at the moment called LMP2, and we've got a perfectly good class called GT, and we've got da-da-da, but keep them as pure classes, and then just see who happens to be the fastest of them.
I love your purity of thought. They have a word for it, don't they? They call it stratification.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, or something like that, of the classes, because there is a perceived, in fact, no, I'll rephrase that, there is an actual hierarchy of classes, that the prototypes should always be faster than the GT cars, and the GT Pro cars should always be faster than the GTM cars. I tend to agree with you. I think the ACO missed a trick in hypercar by not just saying to the Le Mans GTE manufacturers, what can your cars make if we started to take the restrictors out, or we give you much more power? And speaking to a couple of those manufacturers, as we're still under red, by the way, that they said, yeah, we could do 225s, we could do maybe even 220s at Le Mans, and we could make the kind of power, and then you would have street cars running at the front of Le Mans. Ah, says the ACO, but then there wouldn't be prototypes. Well, you know, look at a Porsche 911 RSR 19. As much as I'm a Porsche fan, you know, how much of that is a Porsche? Look at a Corvette. How much of that is a Corvette or a Ferrari? You know, they are very close. They are more like IMSA GTPs that you were mentioning earlier on. However, that's not the case, and there is the need in the ACO and the FIA's mind to have this hierarchy, which is prototypes first, pro prototypes first, privately a prototype second with pro drivers and pro am drivers, and then the pro and the pro am GTs.
Agreed. And the reason for that, John, is quite simply because major manufacturers like Toyota, like Audi, like Porsche, they want to come along and they want to have the condition that they can come along spending enormous sums of money and win the race. And I think ultimately that's where the pressure for that stratification that you describe comes from. It's coming from the top end market that says we are coming along here to win Le Mans. And if you create a class for somebody to win the race on half the budget, then we're not going to play. And the ACO wants to have the manufacturer involvement there.
Yeah, absolutely right.
I'm looking at the tracker at the moment. You were right, just mentioning still under red flag here, and I'm thinking, why is that then? We seem to have two separate incidents at two separate points, one being either coming out of Tête Rouge heading towards the first chicane on the Mulsanne Strait, and there, car number 86, the GR Racing Porsche of Mike Wainwright, Benjamin Barker and Tom Gamble is shown as being stationary. And then we have another incident point at the entrance to the Porsche curves, just where the public road used to go off to the left, but that's no longer public road. But some people call it McNish's Corner. Various people have different names for it because it's the first of the Porsche curves anyway. And the number 63 Corvette, I'm afraid, is being shown stationary there. And that was in the hands at the point of the red flag of, who was it at the number 63? Antonio Garcia. So Antonio Garcia has not made it back to the pits. And Tom Gamble, it was at the wheel of the number 86 car, which is now going backwards on my tracker, which is a sign that the tracker's working because... that must be GPS. So I suspect that's probably on a flatbed, the number 86 car then. So we are making progress, but there do seem to have been two separate unrelated incidents, which have caused the red flag.
Right.
Thank you, by the way, to Graham Goodwin, who updates me regarding the 86 car. Yeah, single car accident at the first chicane for the GR Racing Porsche, and Graham describes it as a heavy impact for Tom Gamble, but I don't know whether there was another car involved. The Corvette, as you say, Paul, stopping at a completely different part of the circuit, suggesting that is a separate incident, but that will be the reason, I would think, for the lengthy stoppage to the session is to make sure Tom is okay. I understand that he got out under his own steam, but probably into a rescue unit and then take it to the medical centre as a precaution. But by the sounds of things, that might be quite a badly damaged number 86 Porsche, which is a real shame.
Indeed. And from the tracker, it looks like it was actually before it got to the first chicane, rather than it being at the first chicane. So that's why I thought possibly as a result of an incident coming out of Tête Rouge.
Yes. Which is obviously a very fast right-hander. And unless a tyre's let go, you have to think that probably there was another car involved. But very difficult for us to say. Purely just hearing just little snippets about this incident. But yeah, can't necessarily provide you an answer for... the other car, Antonio Garcia's now mid-engined, of course, Chevrolet Corvette C8R, the first time that those cars have been seen at this race meeting. They weren't able to make the trip last September to take part, but one of them has made it back to the pits, but the second of them, the 63 car with the 64 having posted a better time, a 355.5 by, I'm not sure whether it was by Nick Tandy, but Nick was the last to drive that car and he's just brought it into the pit. But the sister car, number 63, the yellow machine, stranded out on circuit, but we don't know whether that's as a result of some damage. It had very recently done its best lap of the session, in fact, a 355.932. And on the next lap, Antonio Garcia hitting some type of issue towards Porsche curves. Earl Bamber is sandwiched between those two Corvettes, by the way, on the timing screen. GT Pro is topped, whilst we wait for this red flag to come to an end. GT Pro with the 92 Kevin Estre Porsche fastest by only 1.1 seconds from the sister Porsche GT team 911 RSR 19. Combe Ladegaard, who set pole position in Hyperpole last year on the Thursday morning for the GTE AM division, and he has been welcomed into the fold in the pseudo factory outfit AF Corsa in the 51 Ferrari for this year's race. And he's only 28 thousandths of a second slower than the 91 Porsche. So there or thereabouts for both Porsche and Ferrari, the World Endurance Championship regulars. And from a balance of performance standpoint, making this point in our preview sessions, it does seem like the Porsches and the Ferraris are very evenly matched from 2 6-hour races and the 8 hours of Portimao. Strangely, it's the fact that either one Porsche or one Ferrari seems to do better than the other. But we do have regularly the 92 and the 51 Ferraris, Ferrari and the 92 Porsche doing very, very, very well in the races and are separated by only a couple of points in the championship. It just seems to be that all the bad luck goes the way of the 91 Porsche and the second of the Ferraris. But I think that bodes well for a good race between the championship regulars. And then when you add the two Corvettes into the mix and the WeatherTech Porsche as well, I think we're in for actually a barnstorming GT Pro competition, even though we're a relatively small entry there compared to previous years.
And it's brought Earl Bamber and Lawrence Vanthoor back together again.
Well, that's a good thing, full stop, isn't it, really?
Indeed. So just a couple of things coming through on the Twitter. I've got some news for you. Just to underline, by the way, that sticker is free other than the cost of a couple of stamps. One to send your envelope there and one on the stamp to get it back. Jake Parrott says, is there a link available to the GPS tracker? I thought it might be behind the paywall on the 24 Hours app, but apparently it isn't. So no, I'm sorry, there isn't. That's something that's made available to Paul Truswell and other broadcasters only. So sorry about that. But you should now be able to buy the ACA version of the app for Le Mans only, by the way. And the responsible adult tells me that we've got some special free backstage offerings on the ACO's website. We'll have news of that coming up, if not later on today, certainly during the week. Unfortunately, however, I will warn you that the ACO app content does not start until Wednesday. So Wednesday is when it kicks off on that. Sorry, Paul, go ahead.
Just to say I've had a message from Race Control to the effect that the estimated time for restarting the session to be confirmed will be 11:57, which is, 3.5 minutes time. The cars that have made it back to the pits have all made it back. The two that, as I say, we're missing that didn't make it back to the pits, being number 86 Tom Gamble and 63 Antonio Garcia's Corvette, those cars having not made it back to the pit lane. But as I say, green flag to be shown fairly shortly. Just going back to GTE Pro, Johnny Palmer was just running through the positions there. Kevin Estre having set the quickest time in the car number 92. Michael Christensen, the other driver who has driven it this morning, the third driver of the trio, Neil Jarny, yet to have a turn behind the wheel. The 91 car, Rickard Leitz, Fred McAveachy and Jimmy Bruni have all driven the car this morning, and it was Fred McAveachy who set the quickest time for it. So 3:54.0 for McAveachy and a 3:53.2 for Kevin Estre. From the AF Corsa team, the 51 car, Combe Ladegaard and Alessandro Pierguidi have both driven the 51, with James Collado being the third driver yet to have his go. For the 52, Miguel Molina and Daniel Serra have both driven the car. the number 52. So it's Sam Bird, the late announcement entry to that car. Sam Bird, the driver who's not driven it yet, and Daniel Serra is the driver who set the quickest time in the 52 car, 3:54.479, and Combe Ledegaard actually quicker in the session so far, not only than the other car, but also quicker than Alessandro Pierguidi, who's already got a 24-hour race win under his belt for this year. The pair of them, Ledegaard as well, driving in the Spa 24 hours and winning that one in very memorable circumstances. So not that long ago, that memory, I'm sure, will still be fresh in his mind. So Porsche and Ferrari, as Johnny was saying, well matched. But at the moment, Porsche just with the upper hand over the Ferrari and then the Corvette, the fastest of the Corvettes. I think, Johnny, you'll be pleased but not surprised to know that Nick Tandy is the quickest driver of that car at the moment. Tommy Milner having driven the first portion of the session, Nick Tandy having taken over from him just over an hour and a half into the session. And we're coming up now on very nearly 3 hours into the session, still under red flag. And
just gone back to green, Paul.
Just gone green.
Whilst everybody's getting up to speed, we'll take an hourly update in a sec. So give Paul a chance just to get a breath and then do the rundown of the top times. If you are just joining us here on Haggerty Radio Le Mans, hashtag Haggerty RLM. A reminder that we've got about an hour and 4 minutes still to run. And then we'll be asking, what is LMH? With the editor and the deputy editor of Race Car Engineering. That's Andrew Cotton and Stuart Mitchell coming up in the lunch break. But whilst the cars get back up to speed, let's take the opportunity so we don't miss any action on track and we'll take our next hourly update here on RS1 Haggerty Radio Le Mans for 2021.
The hourly update on Haggerty Radio Le Mans.
And after a deep breath, here's Paul Truswell.
Thank you, John. Yeah, we've had 3 hours of the session gone, then another hour to go, and then another 5 hours after that, but an hour to go until lunch. At the moment, it's Toyota in the lead. Brendan Hartley currently at the wheel of the Toyota. 3 minutes, 31.263, his best time, just a quarter of a second over a full lap. Quicker than Nicolas Lapierre at the wheel of the number 36 Alpine, his time of 3:51.519 seconds, and then under half a second slower than him is the Glickenhaus car number 708, currently in the hands of Frank Mayeau, but the time was done by Olivier Pla, and the Glickenhaus is third fastest in 3:31.920. So Toyota, Alpine, Glickenhaus, 1, 2, and 3. Fourth fastest is number 7. The Toyota, Mike Conway, has taken it back out again, 3:31.986 for him. So the top four separated by under 3/4 of a second, 0.7 of a second just separating the top four. Fifth fastest and fastest of the P2 cars is the United Autosports car number 23, Paul Di Resta, currently at the wheel, 3 minutes 33.038 for him. And he is 0.4 of a second quicker than the other United Autosports entry, the United Autosports USA entry, car number 22, Fabio Scherer, now at the wheel of that car, 3:33.428. And then third fastest in P2 and seventh overall, Robert Kubica at the wheel of the WRT Orica, number 41, and he's done a 3:34.167. So Orica's all the way, as is the way in LMP2, but two United and WRT in the top three, with Rita Competizione in fourth place, the courtesy of car number 82, Ryan Cullen at the wheel of that car, 3:34.577. The innovative car is splitting the P2s from the GTEs still, and that car currently at the wheel of Mathieu Lahaye. It's car number 84, and it's done a 3:45.089. And then we get the GTE Pro cars lined up pretty well, with Porsches ahead of the Ferraris. The number 92 Porsche, fastest of all at 3:52.901, and at number 91 with a 3:54.074. And then third fastest is the AF Corsa Ferrari, 3:54.102, and then Daniel Serra with the his Ferrari, 3:54.479. In GTE AM, it's still the D-Station Racing Aston Martin Vantage, number 777. Satoshi Hoshino is still driving that one. His best time in the GTE AM class is 3:56.945. Second in GTE AM is the number 98 Aston Martin, now in the hands of Marcos Gomez, 3:57.095. And the third fastest in GTE AM, car number 54, Thomas Flohr, with his AF Corsa Ferrari, 3:57.223 seconds, his time. Those are positions, under an hour to go of the session.
Keeping you up to date, the hourly update on Haggerty Radio Le Mans.
And this is RS1, which is Haggerty Radio Le Mans for today and the rest of the week. Thank you for joining us wherever you are in the world. Plenty of you who are around the world. Keep the tweets coming in at Radio Le Mans, hashtag Haggerty RLM. Hello to Otter FR. Everything running smoothly. Haggerty Radio Le Mans commentary listened in. Looking forward to a special offer. Looks like ticket sales, understandably, are soft for this year's edition, so happy I'll be trackside again next week, or this week, I suppose. You mean there, Otter. Looks like you're not going to have a damp pocket this week at Le Mans. Looks like decent weather in terms of the running to the race and through Wednesday through to Sunday afternoon. In the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre, it's Paul Truswell, Johnny Palmer and me, John Hindhoff. And it's into the last hour of the morning session now, just after midday. So good afternoon if you are just joining us, Central European summer time. And if you want to know what's going on for the rest of the week, we are gradually, as another yellow flag comes out at Marshall's Post, 35 double yellows actually being shown there. I'll get Paul to have a look at that. But if you want to know what's happening and when, then if you go to RadioLeMans.com and scroll down to the bottom, the RS1 schedule is there. We have got extra shows to add in around the live, but all the live is in there right now. And you can subscribe to that, and then your calendar app will update automatically. I just don't know. Paul, do you know what happened at Marshall's Post 35? I leave that to the clever people who are talking ones and zeros. It's been removed, but double yellow from race control at Marshall's Post 35.
It was, and as you say, now removed. All I can tell you, for those of you who don't have the Marshall Post's map in front of them, is that that's the Ford chicane. Talking about things that are available, if you go to the WEC website, there is a track map available which does tell you where all the Marshall posts are, and it also tells you where all the timing loops are and various other things. That's on the FIA Alcamel timing bit of the website. You don't necessarily need to go to the Le Mans for all of the information, because the Alcamel website has some as well, and they do have a very detailed track map, which, as I say, has all the Marshall's posts and things on it, and you can download that and print it out. Anyway, that double yellow.
Yeah, I found that now.
Got it?
And the entry. That's very handy.
Yeah, that's the entry for the test day as well on that, which is useful.
I'm putting that on a screen now. I've got that on another screen. So that's
excellent.
Good. Yeah, very good.
A lot of detail on it. You have to made quite big. Anyway, the yellow was at the Ford chicane, has now been removed. And then another yellow appeared at the Forest S's.
Marshall Post 5, that is.
Tête Rouge.
Excellent.
And that was removed but has now been put back in place. So I think people, the tyres have lost all their temperature while they've been sitting in the pits. They're now pushing on. They're thinking, oh, yeah, there's lots of grip. Oh, not quite enough. So there's either not enough grip or not enough heat in the tyres. But, yeah, so lots of little incidents. But as I say, they are short and sharp double yellows, which is, I say, not what we like to see, but indicative, perhaps, of people just pushing on a little bit too hard on cold tyres.
So Johnny Palmer and Paul Trustwell with me, John Heindorf. We're going to let Paul have a break in a little while. Slow zone's coming up before the Forest S's, so just going down the hill to where the Bugatti circuit turns off to the right for the motorcycles in Marshall Post 3 is where the standby for a slow zone area is, and then the slow zone starting just at the bottom of the hill there after the Dunlop bridge and the Dunlop chicane.
And that is due to the Edex Sport Orica number 17 just on the entry into Tête Rouge, I would say. So that car stationary at the moment, and that's what's causing not just a double yellow, but a full-blown slow zone. The problem with the slow zone, not the problem necessarily, but slow zones are properly announced through the ACO runs a Discord system. If any of you have done any iRacing, you'll know all about Discord, which is a messaging system. And that's how they inform everybody at the same time of where slow zones are, so that the drivers or the team engineers can then get on the radio and tell the drivers what's going on. And as I say, with a slow zone, that's done through race control, whereas individual yellow flags get shown, I'd say, almost as reaction by the marshals when they see an incident. So that's why the difference has come up. And as I say, from the look of it, it is a problem for the Edex Sport Orica number 17, which is currently in the hands of Dwight Merriman.
Right. Yeah. Yes, agreed. However, JP, that said, with the slow zone, just before the slow zones came out, we had a new best in GTE AM in terms of the times.
Yeah, I've been spotting one or two improvements elsewhere in LMP2 as well, but yeah, GTE AM is now topped by Absolute Racing and Alessio Picariello, who I'm another big fan of, actually. We were talking about one or two drivers who I always try and pay attention to once they've taken over their various mounts. Well, Picariello has been a superstar in GT3 racing in Asia. He's also now a European Le Mans Series champion in an incredibly close GTE season in 2020. And those that have followed his progress may not necessarily link him with Absolute Racing, but they certainly will with Proton Racing, Dempsey Proton Racing, who are kind of running that car. I mean, there are some members of the engineering crew from China, an Absolute Racing Chinese flagged, but the 18 car can be considered part of the Proton lineup, like the 77, like the 88, and like the 99 car. And that one should definitely not be overlooked. And the time, a 355.841 from the Belgian, to put it now 38th overall, but crucially top of its class, and actually quicker than at least one of the pro cars, two of the pro cars, I make it, because it's gone quicker than the 63 Corvette, which is currently stopped and no longer taking part in the session, and the Hub Auto Racing Porsche for Maxime Martin, which has just come, but well, it is in the pits at the moment, car number 72.
Our London producer, Rob, he makes a decent point about some drivers who aren't here. Gentlemen, that is Sam Bird, Sebastian Buemi, Jean-Eric Verne, Tom Blomqvist, Antonio Felix de Costa, Stoffel Vandoorne, Alexander Sims, Alex Lynn, Nick DeVries, Robin French, who were all on Formula E duties at the final round in Berlin, going the opposite way around today, aren't they, at Tegel Airfield. And they're all platinum graded, but Robin French hasn't raced at Le Mans before. Therefore, Paul still has to do his rookie laps. There's no waivers just because you're a platinum driver.
I'm not 100% sure what the rule is now, because I have a feeling that they have overcome some of the limitations of the rules that they've had in the past. That list of drivers you've just read out are the ones that are grey shaded on that entry list that you've just downloaded.
Yeah.
What is not made absolutely clear is what the grey shading means. But my suspicion is that they will have applied for some kind of allowance to take into account. They are trying to do two events,
yeah,
on two separate weekends.
Tempelhof, by the way, sorry, wrong airfield. Easy mistake. Hopefully not if you're a pilot. It's my understanding that the first free practice session on Wednesday, which we'll have exclusive coverage for, you have to get your rookie laps in there in that session if you haven't done them in test. There is still, and the responsible adult downloads it with every year, there is a list of approved drivers for Le Mans. And to be on it, you've got to have either been racing there in the previous X amount of years, which I think is...
Five.
Down to, it's five, GP, is it?
Yeah.
Thank you. 5 years. And if you haven't raced there in 5 years, even if you've raced there before, but you've effectively let that lapse, you've got to go through the whole thing again, which is a sim session in Paris, which is not cheap, apparently. Then your rookie laps, JP, for quote-unquote orientation or reorientation.
That's right. And, you know, there have been some big names on that list in the past purely because they haven't attended any of the previous five editions of the 24 Hours of Le Mans. And there are one or two drivers who are actually returnees, but their last race might have been 2014... 2013, I think, in the case of at least one driver. So, yes, they're treated as if they've never been to this race before and have to kind of start from square one again. And I think that's quite right, because there will have been an awful lot that has changed since their last version of Le Mans. The track, we were talking about the track map, actually identical to last year, as far as I can tell, down to the 0.7 of a metre. So there's been no track changes year on year, 2020 to 21, but in previous occasions there have been, you know, extra gravel trap added at Arnage, for instance, other little tweaks and changes, not necessarily to increase or decrease the track length, but more about, you know, where you can potentially run wide, still be done for track limits, but there may be a little bit of wriggle room here and there. And then things like safety car procedures may have changed as well. So you need to be on top of those things, and therefore need to put in your laps if you've been an absentee for a couple of years.
Eve Hewitt, our responsible adult here on Haggerty Radio Le Mans, is the guru on driver eligibility. She has the list. She keeps it on her phone just in case somebody needs to know, which I think is phenomenally brilliant.
It's Appendix 10, isn't it?
I defer to the responsible adult under questions of driver eligibility for the Le Mans 24 Hours. But as I say, I know, having spoken to a couple of drivers... must be 2 years ago now, possibly three, who'd been away for a while and who had to go through exactly what Johnny was describing. It was as if they had never raced there before. And I know that there's a few people who are going there this year who have other engagements this afternoon, but that doesn't, I think the waiver that they're given is not being at test day. Therefore, they have to be there on Wednesday and do their 10 laps. It is still 10 laps. Slow zone has been removed at Marshall Post 4, so we're back to a full track. So I expect to see a fully green track. So I expect to see the lap times coming down. Paul, we're going to let you go and take a break till the middle of the afternoon shortly. But before we do that, just your thoughts and observations of what we've seen this morning, interrupted as it has been by a couple of red flag periods. The second one sounding slightly more serious, particularly for the number 86 Porsche, which seems to have had heavy contact. What have you seen this morning that's caught your eye or not?
The problem certainly, yes, as you say, for the 86 Porsche, the GR racing car, and also the 63 Corvette, neither of which have been out since the red flag, which does give me a little bit of a worry. It's still a week away from Le Mans for the race itself, but they're going to have to be up and ready to run on Wednesday. We hope as well that the drivers concerned are okay as well, because obviously Tom Gamble, we heard, making his way out of the car, but hopefully they'll be okay and fit to participate in the race. In general thoughts on what we've seen so far, much as expected. Toyota are on top of the heat, but not having it all their own way by any manner of means. First and fourth as the times stand at the moment. But they seem to be getting through the drivers. They haven't, I did mention earlier on how long each of them have been spending on the track as compared with time in the pits. And it does seem that the number seven top car has spent more time in the pits, less time on the track than the number eight. But quite what's been going in the garage, we don't really know. But certainly Toyota, no real concerns just yet. I'm gladdened to see both the Alpine and the Glickenhaus up there, and how nice and refreshing it is to see different manufacturers up there. I mean, we've only got three manufacturers in the hypercar category, but they're taking the top three places, with the other Toyota, the number seven car, down in fourth place. So, yes, the mix is nice. In GT, we've got a nice battle shaping up between Porsche and Ferrari, and GTM always provides the extra GT excitement as well. So at the moment, as I say, subject to slight worries with two damaged cars, everything seems to be going as expected, and I just hope that we can get through the rest of this afternoon's, or the rest of this morning's session, and then through the 5 hours of this afternoon's session, with the safety car playing a role of some sort during the first part of this afternoon session. But no, things going pretty much as expected. Teams will be working through their job lists, and doing so, it seems so far, relatively successfully.
And we have got a slow zone in the Porsche curves at the moment. Can't tell you for right now whether that is for an incident. Well, it is for an incident, but what form that incident has taken. Paul is looking at his tracker.
You can see me leaning forward.
I could hear you. I could hear you leaning forward. That's exactly right.
It's the number 777, I think.
Yeah, that was Satoshi Hoshino, who was driving the D-Station Aston Martin, run by TF Sport. We'll try and get some more news on that in GT.
Quickest in GTEM, that 777 car.
Yep. Yes, good point. That slow zone procedure coming to an end.
Yeah, he is moving.
Right, okay.
Is all I can say.
Maybe a puncture or something like that. And the slow zone through the Porsche curves, if you've got a slow car going through there, is not necessarily the worst thing to do. Paul, thank you very much indeed. We'll speak to you in this afternoon session. You go and take a wee break.
You will indeed. Thank you.
Cheers, mate. Paul Truswell in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. We'll be back with him. He's coming in for the last couple of hours, last 3 hours this afternoon, in this afternoon session. We'll have Andrew Marriott joining us in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre in the early part of the afternoon. Johnny Palmer and me, John Hindorf, in the Global Broadcast Centre for now. Johnny, and you've just sent me the list of drivers, haven't you?
I have, yes, together with, I think, 125 other pages of rules and regulations. But
I might not download that for the moment, Ben.
The list is there. It actually stretches across a couple of pages, but all it will tell you is those that are not counted as rookies, because obviously the list of potential rookies will be reams and reams. But they've listed on pages 14 and 15 of the appendices those drivers that have taken part in the last five editions of the 24 Hours of Le Mans, and therefore they are not counted as rookies. So, I mean, for example, Nyck de Vries is on there, I'm sure. I'm looking under V, but he's not going to be there, is he? He's under D. Yes, he is there. So the man busy in Berlin at the moment won't need to worry about putting...
It's Robin French that I think is the one that has to do his laps.
Oh, yeah, 100%, because he's never done Le Mans before. So, yeah, he will need to do laps, quite right.
Right.
And who else do we think is at the Formula E meeting then that's potentially going to struggle in that respect?
Has Alex Lynn done it in the last 5 years? He will have one.
Last year he will have done it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I reckon it's Buemi, Van Blomqvist, Antonio Felix da Costa, Van Doorn, Sims, Lynn, De Vries and Frans.
I don't think Jean-Éric Vergne is in the entry. Is he?
Right.
But yes, the others...
Jeff's always at Le Mans for somebody,
I mean, that's the surprise that...
All right.
That he's... Well, someone's going to put me right on that now. But I don't remember...
No,
filling in his
right.
Filling in his name for this
his
one.
Details.
He's raced with G Drive in the past.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
Yeah.
Whilst we're on, the rumours have already started on the Midweek Motorsport, on the Radio Show Limited Listeners Collective on Facebook. But Mercedes-Benz, their racing arm, is poised at the end of today to announce they are withdrawing from Formula E. So following Audi out of that FIA World Championship. So the rumour mill is already in the sixth gear saying, does this mean Le Mans for Mercedes-Benz? Well, they have got a road car, a horribly delayed road car, called the Mercedes-Benz One, that is based on Formula One technology and, you know, is exactly the sort of thing that the ACO want to bring to Le Mans in the road-going hypercar class, as we've got a red flag now.
Mm.
Red flag on the track. So with 35, 36 minutes to go, this was for an incident at Marshall's Post 11, which is the entry to the first chicane on the Mulsanne Strait. So we'll see if we can find who has stopped there. So, all right. So Mercedes-Benz then potential to come back to Le Mans. Would they want to? They've had mixed fortune here down through the years, haven't they?
Yes.
At the Circuit de la Sarthe. But it certainly leaves them open with a space in their motorsport programme, as it were. Also leaves a couple of spaces on the grid for Formula E, although that sort of runs on a franchise system, doesn't it? So, very interesting. At Radio Le Mans, hashtag Haggerty RLM, please, if you'd like to get in touch with us. I'm keeping an eye on the on what's coming in as well on the Collective on Facebook. I know not everybody uses that, But by all means, you can be on there as well. Also trying to chase up some more detail on what sounds like some very bad news coming out of Belgium at the moment that has a motorsport connection to it. But we'll try and get some more news about that as soon as possible, with some unconfirmed reports at the moment. I'm just cross-checking that before I'm going to mention that anymore, but we'll keep an eye on that. 25 past midday, Central European summertime. They're just getting the news through about the Platinum drivers from Paul. Platinum drivers who don't appear in Appendix 10, i.e. the approved drivers, are exempted from obligation to drive 10 laps during the test day if they prove their requirement to participate in another major competition. Well, FIA World Championship would be fine. But they must drive 5 full laps on Wednesday free practice preceding the race. So there we are. They don't have to do the 10 today. That's fine because they're not here. But Robin Freins will have to do 5 laps on Wednesday on that one. So get him out first, JP, just in case anything goes wrong, eh?
Yeah, why not? I mean, he's very definitely a platinum, so he will fall under that caveat, if you like. But yeah, that means that there's not necessarily a mad rush to get from Berlin to Circuit de la Sarthe to complete anything today. It's a slightly later race compared to yesterday, isn't it, in local time Berlin? 2 o'clock start for yesterday's race and a 3:30 start till about 4:40 for today's event. So, I mean, you're not going to be out of there until about 5:30, and that leaves an hour and a half to get to the track. So it's not doable for me, but someone like Robin Freins there is a little loophole that they can take advantage of there, as long as he does his 5 laps on Wednesday, and the team will have thought about that. Team WRT, been around the block for far too many races to fall a cropper as far as that rule is concerned.
So. Yeah, you would hope. Absolutely.
You would hope, yes.
Yeah. So as it stands, as we're coming up for a weather report, things getting very hot on the track, 42 degrees now with that sunshine this morning. And as it stands, Toyota Gazoo Racing split by their major competitors in the top of the prototype, the global prototype category. So the number 8 car with a 331.2 ahead of Alpine and the Rebellion R13. That car. Andrea Negrau brought that car into the pits. They've done a 31.5. 31.9 for the Glickenhaus 708 and 31.9 also for the number 7 car. Incident at Arnage, I'm now hearing from race control, I think, maybe? No. Marshall's, I thought it was at Marshall's Portis 11, but we'll confirm that. The clock runs, of course, so we've got just over 30 minutes to go. I'll tell you what we'll do, whilst we've got no cars on the track, it might be a good idea just to take the weather update here. So if we get back to green, we can have the last half an hour without missing anything on the track. You're listening to RS1 for 2021. It is Haggerty Radio Le Mans.
The weather on Haggerty Radio Le Mans is brought to you by Visit Cayman Islands. It's worth the wait.
It's been a lovely morning so far, weather-wise, around the Circuit de la Sarthe. Current temperature 26 degrees in the air, 42.1 on the track. We're looking for a high this afternoon, 29.30 Celsius. That coming round about 3 and 4 in the afternoon. And by the time we finish the elongated afternoon session, only dropping down to 26 with full sunshine coming in from round about 4:30 Central European Summer Time. For the rest of the week, pretty much more of the same. The high pressure is hovering over Europe, so high temperatures, possibly up over 30 by race weekend in a week's time.
Visit Cayman Islands. It's time. Cayman time. The most comprehensive coverage of the world's greatest motor race anywhere on the planet. This is Haggerty Radio Le Mans.
You like this, JP? I've just checked the weather forecast for today on Grand Cayman, part of the Cayman Islands. And it's pretty much the same forecast as at Le Mans, except it's a lot more sunny. right now, it is 28 degrees, which is, you know, early hours of the morning. It's going to go up to about 30, 31 degrees with full sunshine coming out from behind a bit of early morning cloud from round about 9 o'clock in the morning. How lovely. I really think we should be relocating the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre to there, to Grand Cayman, don't you?
At the very least, we should be visiting the Cayman Islands, yeah, with weather like that. We could propose that for 2022 and the introduction of a few more hypercars. Get it to the Cayman Islands instead. Just a one-off. Yeah, why not?
Just a one. Yeah, I like that idea. I really do. All right. We've got then the number 7 E-Tech car, 17 E-Tech prototype. That was the Dwight Merriman car. Did not get back to the pitch, but we thought that was a bit earlier on. And the number 95 Porsche still out on track at the moment. Those are the only two that haven't made it back to pit lane. So we're having to speculate a little bit without any TV coverage, of course, of this session. It's 95 Aston, excuse me, I said Porsche there. John Hartshorn behind the wheel of that car when it was last picked up. So half an hour to go, JP, that time being eaten into. I asked Paul for his thoughts before we let him go for a wee break. What have you made of this morning session whilst we're in Red Flag? We can have a little bit of a chat around what we've seen.
Yeah, it's been interesting to me really the point I was making at the top of the broadcast, that the difference in speed between the slowest hypercar in that kind of lead batch of four, I'm discounting the second of the Glickenhouses because I think they're working through different issues right now, but the slowest of the four hypercars at the sharp end is actually a Toyota, and then the quickest of the LMP2 cars, and it's a narrower margin than I was expecting. Now, I still don't think we're quite to the best times that can be produced, and it really depends on what each team is trying to achieve in this first 4 hours. But I'd expected the margin to be larger than a second, for instance, between Mike Conway's Toyota and Wayne Boyd, who was last into the 23 car. What I'm really liking is the proximity of the three different types of hypercar, though, as well. So you've got the hybrid Toyota, the grandfathered Alpine, only a quarter of a second slower, and then the non-hybrid current regulation hypercar, being the Glickenhaus, just 0.4 of a second. So four cars when you count the second Toyota, separated by less than a second. They've all done a decent amount of mileage. The 708 Glickenhaus, the fewest laps of that leading pack, at 22, and the most have been produced by the 35 car, number 7 car, that was trying to get outright speed at first, and then I think they've been trying to get as much mileage on board as possible. It's been interesting to note the track getting quicker and quicker, and we always thought that would be the case, as it is slowly swept, and the temperature increase has helped with that as well. And not really a surprise to see two United Autosports cars topping the times in LMP2, and WRT not very far away either. They haven't really had the results they were wanting in the World Endurance Championship so far. They've done their winning in the ELMS, but they're in very good company at the sharp end of LMP2. I think they'll be encouraged by the pace shown so far. Risi Competizione, not used to preparing and indeed racing a prototype, but right up there in fourth place ahead of the 48 EDEC sport car.
I presume, JP, they're getting some help from somewhere. Have we been able to ascertain who's helping them with the running of that?
Do you know, I don't know that. No, but I think it's a good point you make, because certainly the PR one, I have to get my mind to saying these words in a slightly different order, because that's how they appear on the entry list. PR1 Motorsports Matheson. It's always the other way around in IMSA, but that's how they're labelled. They're getting some support from the French squad. It's Panis Racing, isn't it, that are helping them out? Although the team manager at PR1 said that they brought quite a lot more team personnel from the US this time. They ran at Spa with a lot of help from Panis, who are running their own car number 65. And they felt it was very beneficial to actually take a step back and a more observational type role, which has put them in really good stead now to attack Le Mans with a lot more knowledge, because you can have all the knowledge in the world about an IMSA championship, but it is done very differently when you come to an ACO rules regulated championship and the ins and outs of a different competition. So very grateful they were to have taken part in the 6 hours of Spa, although they didn't get to the end of that race, would have liked a bit more running, but feel well prepared for that. But yeah, Risi, you know, the 82 number is the common thing, because we're so used to seeing that on the side of a Ferrari. But running a prototype is a new step. Ryan Cullen, not raced with Risi before, but he's one of the kind of the main kind of backers in terms of that project. But no, that's something for maybe Shay to answer by perhaps chatting to somebody from Risi in the second free practice session of the day. As we go back to green flag running, and not a great deal of time left now in the first 4 hours, only 23 minutes to go, John.
Which is, you know, a handful of laps, isn't it? By the time you've got out and round the 8.5 miles, 13, nearly 14 kilometres around. Johnny Palmer and John Hindhoff for the run up to the lunch break. Morning coverage, certainly from my side of things, being powered by Sacred Coffee. Thanks to everybody at Sacred Sport, big supporters of endurance and motor racing in general. We're back on the single estate, I want to call it. I'm thinking wine there. Single venue. That's rallying, but you know what I mean. It's the Peruvian the Peruvian coffee that bears Andrea Lotterer's name on it, and it is wonderful. Needs nothing to it, no sugar, no milk. Absolutely fantastic. And for all your coffee needs, whether you're on the little things that you put into the machines, whether you're beans to cup, or whether you like to grind your own, go and have a look. They support us. They support motorsport, they have certainly kept me going this morning after a relatively early start to get everything plugged in, wired up, etc. The multitude of screens here, the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre, as the car's heading out of the pit lane, and just about, Johnny, everybody going straight out. Team Netherlands not out yet. United leading in the class. Wayne Boyd hasn't taken the 23 car out yet, but they are the exceptions there. I'm indebted to John De Geese and Sports Car 365, the Risi Competition LMP2 squad. It's about 50-50 from the Risi American team, and they're still, I mean, they are irregular competitors in IMSA, but they do a lot of stuff in Ferrari Challenge. Multiple cars entered in Ferrari Challenge, so they've still got an active race team, very active. So it's about 50 between them and a largely British group led by the Gary Holland, who's a Formula E team manager. So he's probably not around today, so maybe whilst the team manager is away, the rest of the team just getting on with it themselves. Thank you to Sportscar 365 for that. So there's the answer to that question, JP.
There it is. Absolutely.
Excellent. Very good.
Gary Holland, Dragon Racing's new team manager, by the way.
Correct.
Ian Formery. Yeah. Yeah.
I've just heard from Corvette Racing as well.
Oh, yes.
VP Racing, Fuel Pit and Paddock. We had a stop, didn't we, earlier on, the 63. Paul was saying just how good it is to have numbers that we can rely on with cars. 63 is the Corvette. That was Antonio Garcia at the wheel. It did stop on track with what is being called an electrical issue. It's back in the garage. Work ongoing. The 64 also getting some scheduled part swaps. They're not going to come out until after the lunch break. So the debut at Le Mans of the C8R with the mid-engine machine. They are that is going to be this afternoon before we see those cars again, with the afternoon session starting at 2 Central European Summer Time. So we've got about another 18, 19 minutes. Then we've got our lunchtime discussion. Hopefully a bit of learning going on for me, certainly. What is LMH? Answering that thorny question from Race Car Engineering, the editor and assistant editor, Andrew Cotton and Stuart Mitchell. Stay tuned for that. No need to go anywhere. And, oh dear, now, Race Control, just hearing from Race Control, not respecting red flag procedures. And what, 3, 4, 5 cars have been reported. So let's run them down and see who is in trouble with the beak at lunchtime. I can't imagine that there's going to be any real mitigating circumstances. Rinaldi Racing with the Ferrari GTE Evo, which has just gone back out in the hands of Pierre Herret. That's the number 388. Also, TF Sport in the pit at the moment. Ben Keating brought that car in for the 33. Who else is out there? 65 and 56 as well. So those are another two cars. 65 is Panis, isn't it? James,
yes.
Allen has just taken that car out. Still getting used to all the numbers this weekend. So who is 56, Johnny? Remind me.
That's the Team Project 1 Porsche of Egidio Perfetti and Matteo Cairoli and Riccardo Pera.
Right.
Which has already had an issue. Oh, no, it was the fact that it hadn't completed any flying laps, I remember, the 56 car. It had done 6 laps that were either ins and outs laps, but it hadn't posted a flying lap time.
The other one is the other Team Project 1 car, the 46, which is Robbie Fawley's just taken that car out, and that's on that list as well. So 33, ooh, 46, 65, and 388. All report to the stewards for not respecting red flag procedures. Now, this is test day. That might see them get parked for the early part of the session when we go green. I don't think that'll carry forward into race week, but I am absolutely certain that, I mean, it's rather non-specific, isn't it, saying not respecting red flag procedures.
Yeah.
They may have not parked in the right place in the pit lane.
True,
or they may
have
done something on track. But what I do know, and I'm very much in support of it, that our senior race director here, Eduardo Freitas, is very, very good in setting out his stall early on in a race meeting. And although this is test day, and for things like COVID procedures, it's actually being held as a separate event to race week. This is the start of the meeting for Eduardo and his crew, isn't it, Johnny? And he's going to let people know exactly what he expects of them.
Yeah, because I feel, and he feels, that these two sessions should be run exactly as any other session in the week are
totally
done.
Great.
So, you set the rules out as early as possible. Everyone's been to the driver briefing ahead of test day. There's probably another one before we get to the real money sessions midweek. But these rules, I mean, if it's something like you've gone past the pit lane entry and there are, it's in black and white when the red flag comes out, you must return to the pit lane, not as quickly as possible, because there needs to be a notable drop off in speed as well. So although you're not restricted to a specific speed limit like you are through a slow zone, it needs to be a lot slower than arguably 60 kph, I would say, which is pit lane speed limit. But I know there was a car in a recent Michelin Le Mans Cup race earlier on in the season done for driving past the pit lane entry when the red flag was out, because you have to come into the pits, and if you're seen to be doing an extra lap, that's just delaying things. But it could be all manner of misdemeanors, and as you say, that statement rather covers a multitude of sins. So yes, we'll wait and see, and like you say, I think the punishment will be relatively light at this point of the week. Just thinking a little bit more about the Corvettes and a potential electrical problem for the 63. The 63 is the car that ran at Spa and has stayed in Europe since. There was a news story that Corvette Racing would have to build a fourth chassis, though, because of the IMSA meetings that they've got to get to. And they have done, yeah. So the 64...
That car ran...
It ran at Detroit, didn't it? And I think it won the race, in fact.
Road America, the new chassis ran at, and it as soon as it was finished at there, it's going to be the new car is going to become the spare chassis for Le Mans, and they will hope they don't need it, obviously. So the new car, the brand new chassis, ran at Road America last weekend, and was as immediately that was done, was shipped to Le Mans as the spare. The 63 is the car that did
Spa
6 hours with Ollie Gavin back in the seat. I was talking to Ollie last week on Thursday, having a good chat with him about various things, along with James Weaver and Andy Wallace, thanks to Malcolm Cracknell, founder of dailysportscar.com, for setting that lunch up. Unfortunately, most of the stories that were told there are not repeatable. The statute of limitations may not have run out on some of them, the things that we were talking about. However, there was a lot of laughter and a lot of joy about motorsport for that. But yeah, that you're right, Johnny, that one's been here for a wee while. The second one was one of the IMSA chassis that they were using this year, which was replaced by the brand new chassis at Road America that raced last weekend. That brand new chassis en route, presumably, probably already arrived somewhere, and will become the spare car.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the 64 in this test day was a previous number 4 car raced by Tommy Milner in Detroit, and since then it's then been shipped across. But as you say, there's also a spare car as well. So, but I was just trying to think, you know, does that explain why there might be an electrical problem? But actually, the 63 has done a 6-hour race already, so
good point.
It's not a new build, so it's puzzling that, although it has probably been sitting for a while, doing not a lot. But it's best to iron these problems out now, rather than to the all-important sessions midweek, or, heaven forbid, the race.
An extraordinary record by Corvette when you look at what they've done against some really high-class competition at Le Mans. They were running almost at a 50% win rate, which is, for anybody, any class at Le Mans, but particularly for the category that they've been in down through the years, to continue to be so close to the front or at the front is quite remarkable. And very disappointed talking to all the team last year about not being able to come across and run the race with the new C8. But in some respects, JP, they've had a full year of IMSA running on it, a very successful full year of IMSA running with that car. Whereas if they'd been at Le Mans last year, all right, it would have been in September, but they would have had far less running. They've had sort of a season and a half where they would have had three quarters of a season, I suppose, at Le Mans last year. That car only really hitting its straps from sort of July onwards, because we had the delay to the IMSA season after Daytona. So I'm not sure it's done them any harm being away for a year, other than, you know, they wanted to be there, obviously.
Of course. Yeah, no, I know what you're saying, because you know they've got so much more experience in
full course yellow coming. In 20 seconds from now, Eduardo telling us on the race control channel. Now, is this a planned one or do we have an issue? I'm not seeing any yellow flags anywhere. Debris on track after on the left-hand side of the racing line. At that is just coming to Turt Rouge.
Ooh, okay. Well, that really does need to be addressed. I did think it was a strange time to be throwing a pre-organised yellow, because this has already been a fairly truncated session with three separate red flags, and it can be towards the end of the session that we see really good times coming in, because the track will be in a prime condition now. So if that could possibly be avoided, yeah, it obviously can't be, because the yellows are out now, and Eduardo confirming that to all.
Yeah, yellows out. So, yellow at Marshall Post 5, which is just at the end of what I still want to call the Forest S's. So, just coming into Turt Rouge, Marshall Post 5, just at the end of the first timing zone there. So, you've come down the hill under the Dunlop Bridge. You've swooped down through the first right-hander and then into the left and right. That's the Forest S's. That's where the yellow flag out at the slow zone... and the full course yellow is now out at 9:01 French time, spot on time. But note there that that was given a full, well, minute and a half that was warned, and that is tends to be what happens to give everybody the opportunity to know exactly when it's happening. All the teams see and hear that, and they can then look at their immaculately synchronized clocks and count down their drivers to the full course yellow. And that's the idea of doing that. Very nicely managed by Eduardo Freitas and his officiating team in, he would say it was a safety team in race control in the Starship Enterprise, the module Sportif, towards the pit in end of the pit lane. Amazing to think that is now 30 years old.
Wow.
That design. Opened in 1991. That new... And it still looks pretty futuristic, Johnny. You know, our outlook from the TV compound is step out of our darkened bunker, walk out, turn right, and it's right in front of you, and it still looks fresh.
Yeah, it just gives the impression of authority and that something very important's happening in there, doesn't it? So, they've hit the remit perfectly. A little bit less space right behind it now because of the two additional garages that were put in for a couple of years ago, those sort of hastily assembled breeze block additions to driver's right as you enter the pits. I'm intrigued and interested by a full course yellow, because theoretically we wouldn't get one of these in the race. It's normally all dealt with slow zones. So,
and we should explain, full course yellow, different from safety cars.
Yes.
For there are safety cars at Le Mans. Usually three, although only two safety car joining points on some of the track maps I've seen. So I'm pretty certain it's still three. But usually safety cars, if we were to fully neutralise the race, here that is only used under very extreme circumstances. Slow zones, as we've described before, normally used. But here this is a full course yellow, which is effectively a code 80, if you will. Now, there must be a problem with the Jota Orica, Roberto Gonzalez at the wheel, because I've just heard from race control, drivers being told they may overtake that number 38, the Jota car. So they are maybe struggling with a problem. Whether that was perhaps potentially more the cause of the full course yellow than the debris on the track, or was it the cause of the debris on the track? Full course yellow will end in about 35 seconds at 5 to the hour. got to love the way this is all run, so that you can follow the pace of it, Johnny, can't you? And the process of it. Everybody knows what's happening and exactly when it's going to happen.
Yeah, and it's imperative to have countdowns made clear to all involved into and out of a full course yellow, and indeed in and out of a slow zone, a localised full course yellow. Because we've had some, when slow zones first came in, we had some big accidents actually, where cars were approaching a slow zone, didn't realise that after a yellow flag they would have to go to the 80 kph, and actually tried to overtake. I remember a big one coming into Indianapolis in the early years of slow zone. But we are back to green now. Those World Endurance Championship and indeed ELMS regulars should know how to go in and out of an SCY fairly comfortably. And with 4 minutes and 40 seconds left to go, I think that may be the last we've seen of the 708 Glickenhaus, which remains in the pits. But the other three hypercars that topped the session so far, the two Toyotas, 7 and 8, and the 36 sandwiched between them, continuing to stay out. I wonder if anybody's going to be very brave and try and better their time so far in the very closing stages now. The two United Autosport cars in LMP2 are still the quickest in that particular division. Team WRT look to have parked their car, though, short of the end of the session. I still reckon the best of the Pro-Am LMP2s is the Racing Team Nederland car. Yes, confirmed, because the other five ahead of it, or the six ahead of it now on the screen, are all entered into the normal part of LMP2. So it's the 38 that you said had dramas, isn't it? Because there are, of course,
correct,
two Jota cars, but the 28 of Sean Gilleale has set the better of the times for those two from the Kent-based team. And number 28, ninth fastest, fifth in LMP2, ahead of Paul Lafargue's Edex Sport car. Jot van Outer had been driving the Racing Team Nederland LMP2, but that's also in the pit lane.
Can we say that Jota are the foremost endurance racing team from Tunbridge Wells, do you think?
Oh, I would imagine so.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Okay. A bit like Ollie Gavin, you know.
Yardley Hastings.
Yeah. Fastest driver. Okay.
I'm trying to think whether there's another team famous for being from Tunbridge Wells. Not probably in prototype racing.
No.
So you're probably safe there. Yeah.
Right. Okay, good. Another yellow flag just popped out, and let's see if that goes straight back in or whether there is something more sinister. It could have been somebody just dropping a wheel off, but not. No, it's staying out for longer. Only 2.5 minutes to go, just under, in fact. So what a morning it has been. Track clear very quickly indeed. So, whatever it was. No, still out. Sorry, I'll take that back. Coming down to the last knockings here. We'll give you a very quick rundown of the top positions as our close to the show. Obviously, we can't do that for another couple of minutes. But then please stay tuned, because we've got a special lunchtime test day programme. What is LMH? Global Hypercar? Global Prototype Racing? What does it all mean? If you're new to Le Mans 24 Hours, or perhaps you haven't been listening for the whole of this WEC season, and we understand there's going to be a lot of people here just for this race. Or even if you are, but you're still not sure, I've got to say, there's questions I need to ask. Technical questions at that. So we have enlisted the help of the foremost motor racing technology magazine, Race Car Engineering. Their editor, Andrew Cotton, deputy head, Stuart Mitchell, joining me in the lunch break. For that, with just a minute to go, just a note that we have got a few people in the pit. Glickenhaus 708 still in the pit lane. We know that Corvette weren't going to come out anywhere. Jota, 28 in the pits. 29, Jan van Eyter brought that car in a wee while ago for Racing Team Netherlands. Not suggesting there's any problems here, but just saying they're not using the last few minutes. Guillermo Rojas took out the Duquesne team, number 30, Orica 07. Just a few moments ago, so I don't think he's going to get a flying lap. I'm just checking his sector times. Might just get across the line in the next 8 seconds. No, he's not going to. Checkered flag is out now. Spot on 1 o'clock. Johnny, keep an eye. Just keep an eye for any improvements while I quickly do a closing rundown for you here on Haggerty Radio Le Mans RS1. At the top of the times, it is the global prototypes and the hypercar of Toyota Gazoo Racing with Toyota, their Toyota GR10 hybrid with a 3:31.2, pretty much spot on the target time, that isn't it? 3:30 in general running, 3:25 in qualifying is what these regulations were set to produce. Just going through there, Alpine Elf Matt Mutt in second place for the A410 Gibson, 3:31.5, 3:31.8 for the second of the Toyota Gazoo Racing cars, the number 7, and 3:31.9 for Glickenhaus. So that's your top three separated by three quarters of a second there. It would seem that the balance of performance, equalization of technology, whatever you want to call it, is working there. In LMP2, from fifth on down, United Autosports first and second with the 23 and the 22, 33-0, 33-4 for those two. Team WRT, their first Le Mans, will be delighted, I think, with the morning's work. The number 41 car with a 34-1, 34-7 for Jota's number 28, and the top six made up by Edex Sport with the 48. Those are all Orica 07 Gibsons, of course. That's a 34-8. In Pro-Am from LMP2, I reckon that it is the PR1 Matheson's number 24 car that leads that with a 35-4 against a 37-4 for the SO24 Dirob by Graf car in second place. In GTE, that's interesting. In GTE, if I'm reading this right, and Johnny will jump in if I'm not, as Jean-Marie Raphael has just set a fastest time in that, in GTE Am, and pushed him up to 14th position. That's the best GTE time, JP, for Iron Lynx in the 60 car, 335.6. 335.3, excuse me.
It is, but it's surely way too fast for a GT car. So I'm wondering whether there's a little glitch in the timing there, because it's a 335, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, that's prototype pace. So
all right, okay.
I think
so
that's probably an erroneous lap somehow.
He's found a shortcut.
Yes.
He's picked his way through the Bugatti circuit and everybody parked up there and just come straight back in.
Okay. Correct.
So let's put that one to one side. A more representative GTE AM time then is still no pro cars, though, ahead of these times. I'm right in reading that, at least. Would be the Team Project 1 car with a 3:59.3. That's more like it, just under 4 minutes, JP.
Yes. But I'm just looking down to see the times from the pro cars. 3:52.9, the best in pro. And, yeah, what are we saying in AM?
Right,
something weird's gone on with the timing here in the closing stages.
Neil Janney. Yeah, Neil Janney in GTE Pro.
And the 92 did top GT for pretty much all of the 4 hours, so I think we go with that as the quickest of all of the GT times.
And the GTM times, as we mentioned. Just hearing, by the way, that there was a slow car right at the end of that session for the yellow flag, and that was the... In fact, it stopped on the way into the Porsche curves. and that was the Jota car. That was the car that stopped into the Porsche curves. That was the 38, I think we mentioned that. From the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre for the moment, thank you to Johnny Palmer. Also thanks to Rob, our producer up in London, for getting us through the morning session. Don't tune away. We've got all of the 5 hours of the afternoon session with added Marriott and Adam. But now it's time to find out what is LMH. I'm John Hindhoff. Stay with us on Hagerty Radio Le Mans for 2021 on RS1.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.